I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we're going to talk about what's been going on in the country politically. We've just had here on Tuesday night was the vice presidential debate between Trump's vice presidential running mate, Mike Pence, and then Tim Kaine, the Jesuit-educated running mate of Hillary Clinton. Not surprising. Interesting. Very interesting. I didn't expect that. In fact, I didn't even know who Tim Kaine was until he was chosen by Hillary to be a running mate. But it makes all the sense in the world. Hillary and the Democrats want to take the country farther to the left, farther down the path of socialism, and a Jesuit-educated politician would be just the person to help her do it. Because, as we've talked about on the program before, the Jesuits are the authors of social justice, socialism, and ultimately communism. This is all their influence, historically, going back to the 19th century. But anyway, so I only got to see part of the vice presidential debate, and overall, generally thought Mike Pence certainly made the better arguments. I certainly like him and his profile and so on much better than Tim Kaine. And he seems like a very sincere Christian man. He is known. I was listening to one of the commentators who was talking about him beforehand, who openly said that he was against gay marriage. And I thought, okay, well, that's a good reputation to have. At least he has spoken against it in such a way, as a political figure, as a governor, that he's known that that is his stand. He doesn't support it. Why? Because he's a Christian man. Praise the Lord. Now, they say sometimes you can be defined not only by your friends, but by your enemies. If you go to the website, very left-wing liberal website, Mother Jones, motherjones.com, they have an article on Mike Pence. They very clearly are concerned about him, even afraid of him in the liberal community. The headline says, quote, "Stop calling Mike Pence boring. Here's his track record on gays, women, immigrants, and the planet. Bland on the outside, terrifying on the inside," they say. Mike Pence, terrifying. Now, I've seen Governor Pence speak a number of times. I've always thought he was a very measured, calm, very collected, godly in his appearance and his delivery and this kind of thing. But here they're calling him terrifying. Why is he terrifying? Well, here's what they say. They say, Pence signed a bill into law requiring burial or cremation for aborted fetuses. Last month, Pence said he'd like to send Roe v. Wade to the ash heap of history. Pence signed a 2015 bill permitting Indiana business owners to cite religious beliefs as a reason to refuse service to gay and lesbian customers. As Indiana's governor, Pence slashed Planned Parenthood funding, arguably contributing to one county's HIV outbreak. Arguably. Why? Because it wouldn't have had to do with the relentless promotion of homosexuality. That wouldn't have had anything. Only because Planned Parenthood wasn't getting enough funding, supposedly. That's what led to the outbreak, which is pure nonsense. They go on, they say, quote, Pence voted against nearly every piece of environmental legislation. A lot of that legislation is deliberately crafted to manipulate politics. They're not really protecting the environment, unfortunately. Let me skip down here It says Pence gave a floor speech advocating the teaching of creationism in public schools. Pence has advocated the use of public funds for conversion therapy, a discredited and potentially harmful form of anti-gay therapy. In other words, trying to help people overcome feelings concerning homosexuality to help them lead a normal life. From a biblical worldview, of course. Oh, now look at this. Governor Pence funneled $3.5 million in Indiana's temporary assistance for needy families, funds intended for needy families with children, to crisis pregnancy centers which counsel women against having abortions. Now, I can tell you, I had a friend years ago who worked for a crisis pregnancy center out in California. And at least the one that I saw out there in California was a Christian organization. The people who worked there were Christians. And they have a Christian worldview of the issue of abortion. And what they try to do is provide real help to young women who are often in desperate situations where a pregnancy is concerned, and help them find solutions other than aborting their child. And so what they're doing, I think, is a very noble, godly work. And, I mean, who could really fault Mike Pence for wanting to get them funding? Because the issue of abortion is a major issue in the country. But what I always thought about these pregnancy crisis clinic centers and so on is what they're doing is they're not just saying, don't have an abortion. They're saying, listen, these are alternatives. These are things that you can do, and we will help you. We'll help you have the child and take care of the child, etc. And so that's really the focus of their work. So again, you have Mike Pence making a decision as governor very clearly in the direction of his Christian faith. Skip down here. Pence voted in favor of a bill that would have allowed for the detention of undocumented immigrants seeking hospital treatment. In other words, if you have an illegal immigrant that goes to a hospital and it's shown that they're an illegal, that they could then be detained. Presumably that they could be arrested. Why? Because they're an illegal alien and they shouldn't be in the country. So this is where Mike Pence has shown, even before he became Trump's vice presidential running mate, that he takes a stand against illegal immigration and holding illegals accountable. That's how this illegal immigration situation has gotten so bad. The Democrats have, as much as possible, tried to remove any sort of accountability where illegals are concerned. All right, here, and the final one we'll read says, again, it's another immigration issue. It says, Pence was one of 31 governors to oppose the resettlement of Syrian refugees in his state. Well, from our perspective, it's hard to fault him for that. There's a whole variety of problems with these Syrian refugees. I think the thing to remember is that the Obama administration has denied the entrance of Christian Syrian refugees, families who have suffered and come to the United States for asylum and so on, and they've been denied. They're not given access. I saw a report on this where there was a Christian man who has spent an inordinate amount of time going to Congress, pleading with the Obama administration to give entrance to these Christian refugees, and they won't do it. So it's hard to listen to them when they try to play the violin about compassion and this kind of thing, and, well, we need to have compassion on all of these Muslim refugees, et cetera, et cetera. Well, where's the compassion on the Christian refugees? And why is it that better than 90% of the refugees that are being admitted are all Muslims? And then we're not supposed to pay attention to the fact that they're all Muslims. At least that's what they tell us. So Pence seems to be, I think, a suitable candidate for Trump if Trump really wants to be a conservative president who's going to defend the interests of Christianity. Certainly, I think Mike Pence, at least based on what his enemies here over at Mother Jones are telling us, Now, I haven't really followed his career, so I'm basing it on this one article, but he seems to have taken a stand for things that I think many Christians and evangelicals would support. All right, but in contrast, we have Tim Kaine, the Jesuit-educated vice presidential running mate with Hillary Clinton. I wanted to play a clip here. Tim Kaine on last night, one thing I did hear him say, he talked about his Jesuit education, etc. I went online seeing if I could find the audio for it to play for you guys. And what I found was him at a rally with Hillary giving his bio, you know, his life story, as it were, where he basically said the same thing, but he talks about his Jesuit education and his Jesuit background. And so I decided, let's play this so you can hear from Tim Kaine himself talking about his education background with a Jesuit order. Listen.
I went to a Jesuit boys' school, Rockhurst High School in Kansas City. And, all right, some Jesuits in the house. I like that. The motto of my school, this boys' school, was men for others. And that was what we were taught. And that's where my faith, which had been important to me because of my parents' example, really grew into something more vital. It became like my North Star, the organizing principle for what I wanted to do. Even as a young man, because of these great teachers I had and because of my parents' example, I knew that I wanted to do something to devote myself to social justice.
All right, so something to devote himself to social justice. This is what he learned from his time with the Jesuits. These great teachers, he says. And of course, because as we've said before, the term social justice was first coined by a Jesuit priest, Luigi Taparelli, back in 1843. That is, it's the entry philosophy for Marxism. Marxism really has three stages: social justice, then socialism, and then communism. And the entry level is social justice. That's what you start with. And you convince people that by doing all of this humanitarian stuff, that supposedly you are really following the examples and the teachings of Christ. That's how it is introduced, at least in countries that have historic Christianity. And so they start out with social justice. Well, we need to be out helping the poor. Well, how do you help the poor? Well, you need to redistribute the wealth of society. You need to take the money from these people over here and you need to give it to those people over there, etc. That's how it's all got to be done. And then it's got to be politicized because the government's got to get involved and et cetera, et cetera. And it goes on from there. But it's really a control system. It's a way of seizing control of a nation's wealth and ultimately bringing about a totalitarian result. That's what it's all engineered to do. And it's very deceptive, very manipulative. Charity is not the aim. That's not their goal. Their goal is economic control of a system that then eventually gives them control over the entire country. Because if you control the money and you control the guns, then you control the country. And that's why they want to overturn the Second Amendment. That's why they want to seize total control of our economy through these principles of social justice. And really now what they're calling democratic socialism because of Bernie Sanders. All right, let's go to our commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more. We're going to talk about some of the polls, the presidential polls from the first presidential debate with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and what they might mean when we come back right after this.
Is an epic documentary, a powerful witnessing tool for Available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
Noise of Thunder Radio.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we're talking about what's going on in American politics right now. And it's interesting. I was listening to the news last night, and one of the commentators said that the results that have come in on the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton show that supposedly Hillary Clinton won that debate. I remember listening to that and I thought, there's no way that can be the case. There's just no way that can be the case. Well, I started looking into it because I remember this during the Republican debates. A lot of these news commentators were talking about how Trump was either out of his element, he really didn't do well, it was really Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or Ted Cruz, one of those guys, they really won the debate, et cetera. And then you go online and you look at the online polls like the Drudge poll or the Time Magazine poll. And those polls overwhelmingly, when people are voting now and you don't have commentators who are telling you who they supposedly claim won, when the people are voting, Trump would win hands down. He would win by overwhelming margins. Overwhelming margins to the point where there was no, he didn't have any competition. And so I was interested. And then, and I heard one commentator say back during the Republican debates that, well, you can't trust those polls. That supposedly the more professional polls are more reliable, supposedly. The problem that I have with the polls, most of the polls that they're showing on the news on a regular basis, is that the pollsters are the ones who decide who gets to vote. They're doing a sampling of what they say are likely voters, but who are these people? They're calling these people. It's usually 300, 400, 500 people that they call, and they say, well, we did a sampling of 455 likely voters or something like that. And you say, okay, well, where did you get these voters from? How did you determine who it was that you were going to allow to vote? Because that's what they're doing. They're deciding who gets to vote. And then they get their opinion about something, and then they report it in this percentage. And that's what they're showing in terms of the polls on a nightly basis. So saying, well, 72% or 55 or 48% or whatever of Americans think this or that, it's important to remember, brethren, when we're watching that on the news at night, they're not really talking to 52% of the American people, not even close. They don't have access to 52% of the American people. Even if they wanted to talk to them, they don't have any way of doing that. And the reason I say that is, you know, for me, this whole statistic thing, I don't want to get too far off track here, but I take it back to Alfred Kinsey and how he used statistics to manipulate people's thought process so he could get them to go along with certain ideas. And this is what led to the modern sexual revolution. It led to the gay rights movement. It was influential in terms of the abortion argument, etc. So manipulating statistics and saying 50% of the population thinks this or that or whatever, is an instrument, a tool of propaganda. It's a tool of manipulating how people think. And they use this. I remember listening to the speech from Nigel Farage when Farage was talking about the Brexit vote, and he's saying the pollsters were against them and were predicting that Brexit would not happen. And then it did happen. The people turned out and Brexit won by a significant margin. Well, we're listening to these pundits now, and I'm hearing here and there that supposedly Hillary won this first presidential debate against Donald Trump, and Trump was on the ropes and all this other kind of stuff. Now, I watched that debate, and I didn't think Hillary won at all. In fact, I thought Hillary lost within the first 5 minutes just based upon the expressions that Trump had as he was looking over at her, listening to a lot of her rhetoric. I thought Trump won that debate hands down, and Hillary looked nervous, and she had this nervous laughter, and every time Trump went after her, she didn't quite know what to do. She was getting pummeled. And then I'm listening to the commentaries afterwards, and this is on Fox. And Fox is trying to say, well, yes, Trump, he was on the ropes, the whole she really had him there, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm listening to this going, are they kidding? I mean, man, they're really working for Murdoch. Murdoch is a globalist. Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News, is a globalist. And I'm sitting there watching this going, I really can't believe some of this commentary. Well, then you go online, and there's a number of websites that have done this. They're showing the snap polls, which from a variety of different websites where people went online, the common people went online and voted for who they thought won the debate. An overwhelming majority gave the debate to Donald Trump. An overwhelming majority gave the debate to Trump. And one of the top polls is, of course, the Drudge poll. Now, I heard one journalist back during the Republican nominee process, and they would do the debates and whatnot, disparaged some of these online polls as though they're not professional or whatever, because people are just signing on and clicking their vote. But actually, they turned out to be, especially the Drudge report, turned out to be far more accurate, because Drudge had Trump winning by a landslide these Republican debates. And then Trump won the nomination by a landslide. He ended up getting more votes than any other Republican candidate in history. All right, well, with that in mind now, the polls that were done, the internet polls that were done, the Drudge report, after the first debate between Trump and Clinton here, the Drudge report gave it to Trump by 81%, Hillary 18%. Who won the first presidential debate? Trump by a landslide, overwhelming landslide, at least according to Drudge. According to Drudge, 81%. Time magazine had it for Trump at 58%, Hillary 42%. And those were the two polls that I looked at during the Republican primaries, were Drudge and Time magazine. And Trump consistently won each debate that they did on Drudge and Time, because Drudge really represents the conservative audience. Time magazine represents more of your liberal and independent audience, I think. That's my interpretation. The Star Tribune was one who gave it to Hillary. Hillary did get some of the polls. Some of the opinion polls gave it to Hillary. But the overwhelming winner was Donald Trump. CBS New York gave it to Trump. 24,000 votes. And Hillary Clinton only got 17,000. Fox 5, Donald Trump won 61% to Hillary's 33%. WCPO in Cincinnati, Trump at 60%, Hillary 35%. San Diego Union Tribune, California, Trump 66%, Hillary 34%. News 2 in Nashville, Trump 63%. Hillary, 36%. Okay. Even Slate magazine, which is normally a left-leaning mag, Trump gets 54%, Hillary, 45%. The Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas, Nevada, Trump, 81%, Hillary, 19%. You study what's going on. Whenever Trump has a rally or gives a speech somewhere, you're having these huge crowds that turn out, where thousands of people, tens of thousands of people are turning out. And there's where they've got to turn people away because they don't have enough room for everybody who's turning out to see Trump speak. Meanwhile, with Hillary, there's all of these reports of these small crowds of people that turn out. I'm sure she gets some large crowds, but in many places that she goes, she can barely fill an auditorium or a space or whatever. There's just not the enthusiasm for Hillary. She's got supporters. There's no question about that. but she doesn't have the kind of momentum and the kind of energy and support that Trump seems to have. The Washington Times gave it to Trump, 71%. Look at these margins. Hillary, 22%. Trump's not only winning, he's winning by a huge landslide when he wins. Just a ridiculous landslide, just like when he was running for the Republican nomination. Now, to be fair, I should say there are some polls that do give the win to Hillary. There are, but they're clearly a minority, but there are some. All right, brethren, we are out of time. That's going to do it for us today. That is our show. We'll stop it there, but we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.